We got to Sunday night. We're launching at 6 a.m. on Monday. And I still got clocks to build based on satellites and all these late comers to the party. Somewhere around, 10, 11 o'clock, the computer just dies. The main on-air computer just dies. I can't power it up. I can't get anything to work on it. I can't even explain to you the feeling. It's 11 o'clock on a Sunday. Who in the world are you going to get to help you with a computer on a Sunday night?
Welcome to the Voices of Freedom podcast, where we sit down with the voices behind the scenes at Freedom 95. And now your host, Jeremy Butel.
Thanks for listening. Today we sit down with the guy who is essentially responsible for the Freedom 95 format as we know it today, and the guy who launched it. Jeremy Bielek was the original program director of Freedom 95 when we flipped from Oldies in 2007. He worked around the clock for a while to make it happen at that time. He's lived an extremely interesting life, including pastoring a church, coaching a basketball team, fathering a large family. We'll get into some and or all of that in today's conversation with the original program director of Freedom 95, Jeremy Bielek. You may remember this 12 years ago now, a little over 12 years ago now. Growing up, for the first 28 years of my life, I was the only Jeremy in the room ever, literally ever. And so it took me probably over a year. You were here already. And I came as an intern initially. It took me over a year to stop turning my head when someone walked in the room and said, Jeremy.
Yes.
And so then I got used to it, and then you left. And here you are in the building today, and people are saying your name, and my head is jerking again.
it's a flashback. It's like a twitch.
Yes. I'm reliving that all over again.
There you go.
What I didn't tell you is I had you in here to discuss the finer aspects of zone offense.
Oh,
on the basketball court.
Are you
prepared for such things?
Yes, that's a fun thing for me. I enjoy talking about that.
We may talk a little hoops, but we have Jeremy Bielek, who is, we'll call him the program director emeritus.
Okay, I like that.
I've got his office quite literally. I've got his desk quite literally, and his first name. So a lot of parallels there.
And you have a middle initial J and last initial B, correct?
Yes.
Yeah, that's so we follow that all the way through.
And a bunch of siblings with J names.
There you go.
So I believe I drove your car at one point. I know for sure that I lived in the apartment complex you live
in. Yes, that's true.
So I'm living your life just like five years on delay.
Which is good, because you can always check in with me.
Which I guess means I'm going to be called into the ministry anytime.
Oh.
Who among us is not? When I got here, we were oldies on the FM and sports on the AM. And Freedom did not start until a few months later. So I guess I want to take you back even further than that. I knew you as a disc jockey on 98.3 WXIR, Love 98, doing some afternoon work. I believe it was you and Craig Boyer.
Yes. First job out of college.
Okay. I don't know if we want to go back that far, but you were in the Indianapolis market and ended up helping to launch what was Joy 96 on 95.9 FM.
Yes.
At the time. Should we start there?
That's fine.
Okay. Well, how did you get to be a part of that on the ground floor?
That's a great, great story. It's very applicable to my life today in ways that we're not even going to go through.
Okay.
But I'll never forget sitting in the conference room / sales office at Love 98 when they told us that we had a conference call with the owners who resided in Washington, D.C., worked in Washington, D.C. They were, I think, three Jewish men, ironically enough, running a Christian radio station.
Right.
And they called us in, and we knew that probably wasn't good because we had never met nor heard from the owners in Washington, D.C. And they got on the phone, and they thanked us all for our service and said they'd sold 98.3 to Disney. And that was the same month as I just had our first child, about less than a year into our marriage. And I thought, I'm going to be without a job.
Yeah.
And they had given us through June, I think, if I remember correctly. So they offered severance packages for those who stayed and all that stuff. And I began a hunt for a job nationwide. And I couldn't even get a call back. Like, I couldn't get anyone to respond. Now, this is back in the days when you would, like, mail stuff out.
Sure.
And I was sitting there thinking, I'm in trouble. And it was a real good test for me to trust the Lord and say, the Lord knows where I'm supposed to be. The Lord knows what I'm supposed to be doing. And I can just trust him for this. Of course, I wasn't completely. And lo and behold, the sales manager there at Love 98, Richard Sickles, got in contact with the owner of 95.9, Dr. Gene Hood, who has gone to be with the Lord. And he proposed 95.9 changing from, I believe it was Black Gospel at the time, to take over the CCM format that Love 98 was abandoning. And he said, I have a program director. He hadn't talked to me, but he says, I have someone who I think could be the program director. And so he calls me and tells me, I'd like to have you meet with Dr. Hood on Friday to talk about you being the program director at this new radio station. Dr. Hood's never seen a resume, never met me in my life. And there we were sitting down at Cracker Barrel on a Friday morning. Dr. Hood used to eat eggs over easy, so covered in pepper that you thought they were burned. And we sat there and talked about what would be Joy 96. And again, never saw a resume, never. That was the one interview. And by the end of the breakfast, I had a job as a program director. And I went into Love 98, gave my notice, and walked away from a severance package.
Oh, wow. Okay. Was there some overlap with Love 98 before they switched to
Disney? There was probably, I think it was about 6 weeks. But we didn't go on the air until Love 98 was off, I believe. I believe it was like right when they went off, we went on.
This was pre-K-Love days?
Yes. So K-Love came around. K-Love would have come around within a year, maybe, from when we went on. And then so did the song.
Yeah,
those two came in to try to gobble up the market. Because our signal, that Love 98 used to be a Western, and the pattern was just totally different.
Sure.
I wouldn't say totally, but not as much crossover. So those two came in to try to get a piece of the pie.
So you were PD?
Yes.
Probably music director?
Yes.
And on the air?
Yes.
Daily, right?
Yes.
You had the, what was it called, in the afternoons, I believe?
Joyride.
Joyride. And maybe some selling?
Yes. Yes, I did sales as well.
And a fairly newlywed with young kids.
Yes.
Yeah.
And we had, Jer would have been born a year in to the project.
Yeah, I'm thinking that sounds like a whirlwind, but then again, I know you, and I know your life and what it's been for the last 20 years.
Yeah.
And so maybe...
I like having a lot of plates spinning.
Evidently.
Like it just seems natural to me. But there was a lot. Julie could tell you even more about it. There was a lot going on then, and a lot of... We had someone we'd hired on air that we thought would be pretty solid and did not work out. So very early, we had to shift the who was doing what shift and try to bring someone else in. I think we ended up automating for a little bit during midday. And so there was a lot going on, trying to get a new thing off the ground and trying to get that audience from the market that was starting to seep away. You wanted to hit them and grab them right away. So there was a lot of challenges. But one of the challenges a lot of people wouldn't know about is the fact that whoever was the general manager here before used to apparently bring his dog in on a regular basis. And we had a horrible flea infestation in the first month we were here. Like, I'm not joking. We had to tear out all the carpets. We had to, I don't know what all they did, but I was at the doctor with flea bites that looked like some sort of plague had hit me all the way from my feet up to my waist.
Really?
From working in this building when we first launched, when we were gutting, and we were trying to gut the place because it was in bad shape. But anyway, that got done and we're beyond that. But that was one of the more memorable pieces of it.
Let's see, we've come a long way.
Yes. No fleas here.
Count my blessings on that. I had not heard that story. So that would have been about 2003.
That was 2003.
Okay.
Summer of 2003.
Talking 16 years ago already. And then at some point with the market changing and all that, it became an obvious move to go to oldies, just the sensible thing.
I think it was something that people wanted to do mm-hmm. because another station, very popular, Gold 104.5, ironically enough, that was the college radio station I worked at Butler University. I began to wonder if I had like some sort of pseudo curse that was on me because I came out to go to Butler University as a freshman to work at this 50,000 watt radio station, 104.5, and try to get radio experience in a major market. And after my freshman year, they sold the radio station. So then I end up at Love 98 when they sell that radio station. And then I'm here at 95.9, and it wasn't sold, but they ended up leasing the station.
Okay.
And that's when the new ownership decided 104.5 was, which had been sold, became at some point oldies. I don't know if it was oldies right away anyway, but they dropped the oldies format and it became attractive because that was a huge listenership in the area. And instead of competing with two other Christian radio stations, we can be the only oldies station. So they went with that.
And there was a lot of DJ talent available in the market.
Exactly.
Yeah.
They thought, you know, revenue to get the advertisers, get the DJs, it'd be a plug and play type thing. And they were really hoping it'd take off.
Speaking with Jeremy Bielek on the Voices of Freedom podcast. He was my boss for a little while here at what was then XL950 and Gold 95.9. I got here in June of 2007. By November of that year, we were Freedom 95.9.
Yeah.
I'm skipping ahead a little bit here, but you
that's
know,
fine.
Time. There are a lot of miracles that accompany the story of the launch of Freedom 95.9. What stands out most to you from that period?
What stands out most? That was so crazy. Like, I had been pitching that idea. Like, I thought when they were talking about going gold, oldies, even then I was saying, this needs to be a conservative talk station. I just really felt like that would be a good thing to grab. God knows we couldn't have gotten the lineup we got mm-hmm. as Freedom had we gone early. So it worked out in that respect. So when it came time where the oldies format wasn't caring like we thought, and that a lot of that had to do with demographics, which is why 104.5 probably dropped it in the first place. Here came opportunity to what are we going to do now? And they remembered that I had really pitched that hard. So then it was a matter of, is it possible? Well, we got a phone call. I think they're probably a top five. We got a phone call from someone who knew someone inside at the time, 93.9, or not 93.9, who's, yeah, 93.9. Yeah, because they had switched from Christian to talk while we were oldies. And so we got a call from someone who knew someone in there, and they said they're going to drop this format on this on such and such date. That's huge in this industry, because if the format drops before you know about it,
right,
someone else might grab it before you can get to it.
Sure.
But we had that information, and so that began the opportunity to start piecing things together as quickly. So that was number one. I'm not ranking that as the top miracle, but it's one of the top five, and it was the first domino to fall. So the second one would be that we had to figure out what we were going to call it. You know, there's all that imaging that you've got to get ready if you're going to launch it pretty quickly. We wanted to have it up by the time the other one dropped. So there's a lot to do. And like, I don't know if it's 6 to 8 weeks sure. that we had to try to reformat everything. And so this may seem like a small one, but it seemed to me gigantic because it felt like, and people may not join me in thinking this way, but it just felt like God is with us at this point, because we had to get the call letters we wanted.
Right.
WFDM, we had to grab those from the U.S. Navy.
Coast Guard, right?
Coast Guard,
yeah.
Yes. Yeah. So some governmental thing with boats. That's what I remember. Anyway, and weapons, right? So I'm thinking, what are the chances that these guys just hand over call letters? So we had to write the FCC and the Coast Guard and say, and I've still got the letter in my office, and say, we would like the call letters WFDM. Not only would we like them, but we need them by this date, which the process itself was supposed to take 30 days. And within weeks, we had permission from the Coast Guard and the FCC to switch to WFDM on the launch date. So that was cool. But then three of the more interesting pieces, which I would say were the top three. Number one in that category of getting the programming was sitting in your office, which was my office at the time.
Correct.
And calling the executive VP for the Dave Ramsey show. And he used to be on 95.9 back when it was Black Gospel, of all things. He was on in the evenings. I think they put him on or late. Anyway, so we...
Dave, right?
Dave was. Yeah. So we had kicked Dave off to become a CCM station. I'm glad he didn't remember that, or at least if anyone did, they didn't assign it to me. But I ended up calling the executive VP, and I said, I would like to know if you want to be on our station when you get dropped from this other station on this date. And there was a little bit of silence. And he said, what do you mean get dropped from this other station? This guy had no idea that they were about to be dropped.
Wow.
So I told him, I said, I'm serious. Like, we have pretty good knowledge of this. This is changing, and you're going to be hung out to dry. So we'd love to get you under contract. Well, he said, I'm going to need to get back to you because I don't think he was buying it. So he went to Dave. Dave, from my understanding, from the story he told me, walked into was it Cumulus, I think, that has the offices in Nashville? Anyway, okay. He walked into a very high up office in this national broadcast company. He himself, since he's in Nashville, walked in and said, you need to tell me right now, are we being dropped in Indianapolis on that date? And he found out, yes, they were. Wow. And so I did not have as easy a time with Sean Hannity, who we needed to be the anchor. You know, we felt like that was going to be the huge pull for us if we get Hannity. And his guy wasn't buying it. And so he put us off and put us off, put us off, put us off, put us off. And at one point, my boss, your boss, he says, we've got to make a move on somebody. We can't wait. And I think we were within a week of trying to figure out if we, and you know how it is. It's not just get the guy. You got to build clocks. You got to satellites and all this stuff. You got to figure out. And I said, he has nowhere else to go. He's got to go with us. And so finally, I feel like it was the Monday, and we were maybe going on the Thursday or Friday with Dave Ramsey. And then the following Monday, I think we were going with everybody.
So Ramsey's event was Thursday night, I believe.
Yes.
And Friday you were going to launch a show.
Yeah, I think we did Ramsey only on Friday and then went full boat on Monday. And
by the way, you guys did an incredible job hiding this from the current staff. let me attest to that fact.
In a small building.
Bear in mind, I'm here every day.
So anyway, I was in line at Jonathan Bird's Express Cafeteria, getting what I thought was one of the greatest perks I had in the job, which was
a broccoli salad.
Free lunch at Jonathan Bird's. Yes. Broccoli salad was solid. Not as good as the French silk pie, but.
True.
Anyway, I'm in line and I get the call from Hannity's syndicator and he says, okay, we're sending over the contract. We believe you. We're switching. I don't think they'd received word still.
Wow.
But he knew he couldn't wait any longer. And so he sent the contract over. So that meant we had all the programming we needed. And now it's just a matter of getting everything built. So I honestly don't remember how many straight hours I stayed up in that last weekend, but it was a record for me, and I probably couldn't do it now. But we got to Sunday night, and I was still building stuff. Sunday night, 6 p.m., we're launching at 6 a.m. on Monday. And this was by far, to me, the miracle of miracles in getting this thing launched, because everything else is ready. Everyone's getting ready to launch. And I've still got clocks to build based on satellites and all these latecomers to the party. And somewhere around, I don't know, 10, 11 o'clock, the computer just dies. The main on-air computer just dies. I can't power it up. I can't get anything to work on it. And I can't even explain to you the feeling that and the thought process that's going through my head. It's 11 o'clock on a Sunday. Who in the world are you going to get to help you with a computer at 11 o'clock on a Sunday night? Enter. You got now. This is where you need the hero theme music, because his name is Corey Cleary. And he answered my phone call and said, let me see what I can do. And he came down. He lived probably 25 minutes from here. Came down, got the computer. He had to take it to his place. That began the longest waiting period, probably next to the birth of my children, in my life. And I remember it was around 3 a.m. We're launching at 6 that he says, I think I've got everything transferred over to this new computer. I think it's ready to go. I'm going to bring it down. Because he had to not only build me something new or fix whatever was going on. I can't even remember what he did. But he had to transfer all these massive files over, audio files, program file, everything over, and do it in that window. And so, man, that man, he pulled off something for Freedom that night. Because then it was about 5:35-ish that we got everything to where I thought, I think we're ready to go. And at 6 a.m., we launched Freedom 95.
Without that computer, I'm sure everybody understands, it's not like oldies where you can open the mic and say, here's some more Beach Boys.
Right.
I mean, without that computer, there is no Freedom format. There is no talk format.
Right. Yeah, so that was by far. And some may say, well, why didn't you have a backup? And it's like, we did. We actually had two computers, but it doesn't do either way. You're going to have to transfer everything over. And so it was bad timing, but it was one of the most memorable things about the whole deal.
Taking a trip down memory lane with Jeremy Bielek, who was the original program director at Freedom 95, reliving some of the glory days and the epic tales of woe from the launch. I know that at that point, spoiler alert, you would go on to become a pastor of a church locally. I believe I have my timeline correct in that you had already been called to that.
Yes.
You'd already known that you had been called away from radio. So the mental and professional investment into that format flip, you had to summon that even though knowing you had been called away. Was that weird?
Yes and no. I'm a person who loves looking onto what the future holds, and yet I can very much enjoy the present. And I feel, especially when it's something I love doing, like radio was, I got to the point where handling the problems and building things was almost as fun as being on the air.
Yeah.
And so that kind of thrill to change that station over and bring a format that I thought was very needed in the market, at a very needed time. It was a thrill. It was super exciting. It was being able to do something that I knew could outlast me. And it was something I'd wanted to do for years, from several years before that. So that it wasn't like I had to somehow summon the professionalism and do the right thing, be here. Because I was excited about where I was going, but I knew that's what I was supposed to be doing at the time. And I honestly don't even remember if I knew the exact time, like, because that was a year. That was right at a year before I went into becoming a pastor, because I became a pastor November 9th of 2008.
Was it that quick? Wow.
It was about a year.
Yeah.
Yeah. So, and I knew from around 2005 is when my pastor had told me that he wanted to start training me for ministry and to take over when he retired. And so we started meeting on a regular basis and so on. But so I'd known for a few years that was coming.
I was a couple years into my radio career at the time, and I was moving back from Texas. Indy was home. And I was the program director at a talk station down there, and I handed out my resume to everybody in town here. And I got across your desk, which is now my desk.
Yes.
And you offered me an unpaid internship.
And, everyone's favorite in radio.
Right. And I had already spoken in college classes and said, hey, unpaid internships are where it's at in this business. They're invaluable. Do your own. But me, I was,
you
I
were
was a man.
Right.
I was 28 or something. And that's what the offer was. And then, so I pushed back a little bit, I think. And you looked at me. And knowing the full story later, it made sense. But I remember you looking at me across the table and saying, if you take this, it will be worth your while.
Yes, I remember
and
that.
I was like, I remember that. Man, this and that. If you take this, it will be worth your while. But you couldn't tell me why.
Right.
And I remember you thinking my resume coming across your desk was another God thing.
It was. It was definitely.
For me, it was just another one I had sent out.
Right.
And so.
I knew the moment I saw it that I just knew that this is the guy who's supposed to replace me. And so I couldn't use all the tools I had to try to convince you of that. But I really felt like it needed to happen. I tried to convince the powers that be to do whatever we needed to do to make it happen, which is hard because they were still, I think there was still some denial over whether I would actually leave. But I knew it was coming.
So since then, you've been, you know, you stayed with us for a while.
Yeah.
In a mentor role in some sales and continued to come to staff meetings for a while, even while pastoring a church and fathering many and coaching basketball.
Yes.
We can get to all of that. I hope we have time for it. But looking back, ultimately, you closed the door on radio. You're still part of our family.
Mm-hmm.
Your voice is still on our airwaves in different capacities, but you're not involved in the day-to-day anymore. So as you look back at radio, what do you take from that part of your professional life that you use today in ministry or use today just in your own personal life?
Yeah, there's a lot that a lot of people would say, well, what seminary did you go to? Or why didn't you like go to Bible college or whatever? I actually thought about that when I was younger, when I felt like that might be what I did would end up doing. But it's amazing. Once I was in ministry, I started to see all these things that the Lord had provided for me in working at the radio station. Specifically working with people and working in high stress situations with people, serving people. There are just so many opportunities to do that in radio, communicating with people, both over the airwaves, but also within a business context, mentoring people, getting to kind of mentor you and get you involved, other salespeople, whatever it was. But I think one of the big things too was being on call. Like from the moment I started as program director until when I left, I was the first guy on the emergency phone call list. And it didn't matter if it was 2 a.m. or whenever, I was on call and I had to be ready to respond to what was a technical emergency. And that really trained me up for being on call as a minister. You never know when someone's going to call or text you or something's going to happen. Even outside of my church role, just people knowing that I'm in ministry and with the basketball team I coach, I remember having to walk people through joys and you walk people through griefs and getting a phone call like when one of my former players died a couple years after he finished playing. And I remember that phone call. I remember walking through that as a basketball coach and as someone who was a pastor, but I also remember it was like another emergency. It was like, you're on call now and you need to handle this. And it also prepared me for fathering because when you have as many children as I have, it can seem like the silent sensor alarm is going off rather constantly. And you have to just be able to let some things go and know when is it really important? When do I need to make a big stink about something? And when do I just let that go? Because you can't be all over everything. Otherwise, you just stress yourself to no end. So I think every area of my life benefited from the years I spent at Freedom and before that Gold and before that Joy. Because a lot of people don't understand, too, during that time in Gold, I went from being program director, salesman, you know, I was next to the general manager. I was the man. And when Gold came in, was no longer program director. I went to promotions. Okay. I became on air in the morning, and but I had someone over me who was telling me what I did right and wrong and all everything in between and gave me instructions and so on. But that was somewhat of a near depressing time for me in radio because I left a format I really loved for when I was and I lost a lot of the position and influence, and I had to do things someone else's way. And yet that taught me a lot. You know, it was very humbling and very good for me to have to work hard despite not enjoying the things that I wanted to do. So there's probably more than I could even expound on.
radio is not well known for its sanity in the heat of battle or calmness, calm people, calm situations, environments, reactions. One thing that stood out to me after coming here, after being at a couple different stops, was that in the heat of the battle, you were 100% the same guy as you are here sitting here talking to me. And I have interacted with you inside and outside of radio now for the last 12 years in different capacities. And it's the same guy. It's the same peace. It's the same calm. It's the same demeanor. How much of that is the way you're wired? Because I know some of it is. And how much of that was learned over time? You're not that much older than me, but it seems like you got to that you got to that threshold, that lesson a lot earlier in life. But also you modeled that for me. So when finally I did take that office over, that had been my, you'd gone before me in that and modeled that for me.
Yeah. I don't know that I can point to a time, but I was not always that way. If you talk to my basketball players from my first few years of coaching, they would say he was not Mr. Calm, peaceful.
Yeah.
I mean, I wasn't like raving lunatic, but I was very caught up in things needing to go the way I wanted them to go. I was very controlling, perfectionist, so on. And when they didn't, I got very upset. I think my dad said something to me that always stuck with me when I was coaching in New York while attending grad school. And he could tell I was losing it. We were 500 team and it's JV. So when you're coaching JV, they're on JV for a reason.
Sure.
And he just could tell that things were not going the way I wanted them to. And I was getting very stressed about it. And he said, son, you're going to have a real hard time. This is going to be a real hard career for you if you continue to let everything, every emotion, or basically your being hang on whether a teenager makes the right decision or not. And when he told me that, it was like, whoa, that hit me one way. And then the second thing was when the Lord spoke, I felt very clearly to my spirit about how I treated people in stressful situations. This was before I was married, you know, which is praise the Lord that happened before I was married.
Yeah.
But he just made it very, he just said, it felt like I just heard, you know, it's not an audible voice, but you just hear this question in your mind. Is that the way I treat you when you don't do what you're supposed to do? If I treated you like that, how would that go for you? And I thought, wow, that I'm very glad you don't treat me that way when I mess up or when I cause emergencies or when things are stressful. And he's my peace. He's my vision for the future. He's my hope, you know, that regardless of how this goes, that things are going to be better in the future and so on. So I really received some instruction there, both from my dad, I feel like from the Holy Spirit, to say, you need to handle these things differently. And I've not been perfect since that time by any stretch. I still blow if someone doesn't drop on dribble penetration on the baseline. but it was enough to start to change the way I looked at things, to pause when things were not going the way they should, to breathe and to say, how can I help this situation be resolved, and how can I help people walk through this situation so that we all learn and we don't suffer from it? Like, because it's you suffer enough when things aren't going the way they should. There, we shouldn't cause each other to suffer more because we're not getting what we want. And so I don't remember when all that happened, but I just remember that transformation occurring, and I think it's still happening.
Sure.
It's still being worked on.
Thanks for listening to the Voices of Freedom podcast. We are visiting with the original program director of Freedom 95, Jeremy Bielek. Another spoiler alert, you had the public school basketball coaching experience, but would turn your efforts towards homeschool basketball coaching, the Indianapolis Homeschool Wildcats, and you did that for years. So I guess in the interest of time, we'll skip to the end. Over the past year or so, you were called away from that.
Mm-hmm.
Felt the tug to set that aside in your life. So you knew you were facing a final season in the 2018-2019 basketball campaign. The Indianapolis Homeschool Wildcats. I know you had a bunch of talented rosters during your tenure. How many years did you do it?
The 18 years.
18 years. A lot of good rosters, a lot of great success. State championships, success in the national tournament, I believe.
Mm-hmm.
But this was the year that... This was the year where you were taking a final lap that your players didn't even know, correct?
Right.
Yeah, so...
Only my assistant, though.
Okay, so you were blessed with the national championship.
Mm-hmm. And truly blessed with the national championship. There are still people trying to figure out how we won those games at the end, including me.
It has to feel a little bit providential, no?
I think people have said that. I look at what Tony Bennett got at Virginia and think he probably feels the same way with the way some of those games ended. It's a mystery to me how much the Lord involves himself in the affairs of man. I know that it's very clear that he rules and reigns over everything. I believe that. I also know that we have things that we're doing in the midst of it. We're making choices that we're accountable for. So it's a grand mystery. We don't need to get into all that theology. But when it was happening, we knew we had a team good enough to do it. We've had other teams in the past that I thought were good enough to do it, maybe two or three others that I thought really could go that far. This team, with the way they competed against the public schools that we played here in Indiana, made me really think, boy, this team has the moxie late in the season, especially because we hit a hiccup, a bump in the road in January, and we lost a game I didn't think we should lose on the road. And something happened in the practices following that, and that ended up being the last game we lost in a season. And the run we started to go on was so good and was so fun that I had the feeling like this is so good that surely it's going to come to an end.
Yeah.
And it was just like you're waiting for the hammer to drop almost. Like, we can't play this good for this long.
Really?
And
was it mostly because it was predicated on shooting?
No, it was defense. It was half court defense, which isn't what we had been over the last few years. We've been running gun and press and shooting a lot of three, which we were still doing that, but we were winning games where we weren't shooting well, and that was different. So anyway, and the guys were so unified, made it that much more fun. So it felt like, boy, if this keeps going, we could do this. And yet there we were in the Final Four. With a team taking the lead in the last minute, I think minute and a half. I don't remember when the guy hit the three. And then we couldn't, and nothing would go right. And with, I think it was 10 seconds to go, we ran this out of bounds play. I thought it was going to work. Except we didn't throw the ball. We were supposed to throw the ball and got a guy heaving up a prayer three over a double team from the corner. And I'm just right watching the ball saying, that's an air ball. I've been coaching long enough to know that's not going anywhere near the basket. And my heart sinking to the floor, thinking, oh boy, this is it. And there's this kid, bench player, getting a rebound on the backside and getting fouled right before the horn. And he ends up making both free throws. I mean, there's so many things within that I could go on forever. We go to overtime, win that game, then we're down 14 in the championship without the ball late, get two steals in the last 30 seconds and end up getting a game-winning layup with 10 seconds to go to win that. And we're celebrating in the middle of the floor, and I'm just sitting there thinking, how is this even possible? Like, how did this year end this way? And so it did feel, and I've had many people say, both by the way the games ended and by the fact they knew that after the fact when it came out I was done and I'd known I was going to be done. One person in my congregation, I thought, said it best, and she'd been there. She actually had kids who cheered before I ever got to the Wildcats.
Oh, wow.
And she said, that had to feel like a kiss from God.
Yeah.
And I said, that's exactly what that felt like.
It's funny because I have grown up and I've always been just a crazed sports fan. And for so long, I was convinced that God didn't care about my sports. And I don't pray for Cubs wins. But I've gotten to the point now where I recognize value in my hobby.
Yeah.
And I recognize God at work in so many different areas of my life, and that can include sports.
Yeah.
And so you could say, oh, it's just homeschool basketball. It's just a basketball. The other team was praying too. They were trying to please God too. But I'll just say this. You don't have to agree. You love coaching. You love basketball.
Mm-hmm.
Maybe more now than ever.
Yeah.
It was a simple act of obedience to step away that couldn't have been easy. And so the fact that was rewarded with an earthly win.
So be it.
Yeah. Who's to say that doesn't have
value? Yeah. Yeah. And I've been on the losing side sometimes where I've thought that felt like the Lord, either to bless that team or maybe to teach me something. He's taught me a lot in losses. And so I think I've gotten to the point in that area, and I pray every area of my life, where I truly say God be glorified in everything, whether it seems like it goes my way or not. And that's when we were in between those two, the two free throws that tied the final four game. The second, before the second one, the team called timeout to freeze the shooter. And when we came over, my junior captain said, "Coach, can we just pray during this timeout?" Which was unreal for a kid that age to think of doing that.
Yeah.
And so we did. And we did not pray. Like you said, we did not pray, "Lord, help him make the free throw."
Right, right.
We just said, "We are thankful that we're even in this situation. We want to glorify you. Help us to praise you no matter what." And I'm not saying because we prayed that he gave that to us. You know, I don't know all the ways he does things, but it was neat to just be able to enjoy that ride with him. And that was the most fun part. Regardless of what, why, all the why, which is really the questions we would have. Why this? Why, you know, why would you reward that? He wants us to be with him, and he wants us to relate to him. And that, in that whole ride, in that entire fun season, I felt like he was with us and enjoying and teaching us and teaching me. Because I was the most frustrated I might have not ever been as a coach, but it was in the top 10 when we lost that game we shouldn't have lost. Shortest post-game speech I've ever had in my coaching career, and I was at my wit's end as to what to do with our team. And from there on, we end up soaring. Go figure.
I bet the radio post-game interview with you that night wasn't any fun.
Belichick-like. Yeah.
On to Cincinnati. It's the Voices of Freedom podcast. We're visiting with national champion Jeremy Bielak, former head coach of the Indianapolis Homeschool Wildcats. Got a few more minutes. Want to stay on homeschool basketball just a little bit longer. You were there for a long time. I'm sure that homeschool basketball has come a long way.
Mm-hmm.
For somebody listening that's maybe not familiar with it, hasn't given it a chance, their curiosity has piqued. What would you say to that person?
I would say Blake Griffin, Alonzo Trier, Justin Jackson. Those are just three amazing homeschool athletes that have knocked two of those, not Blake Griffin, but Trier and Jackson had knocked me out of national tournaments before. And those guys came to homeschool basketball because they saw something that they wanted to be part of, that their families wanted to be part of, that they knew they could get where they needed to go within that realm and still get the education they wanted, which I think is really cool, which was one of the goals I had in going to coach homeschool basketball, is to make it so that if a parent wanted to homeschool their child, they didn't have to sacrifice the opportunity to play competitive athletics. And it did take a long time. We didn't play our first public school until, boy, I feel like it might have been 9, 10, 11 years in that I finally got to play public school. And then we started adding more and more and more. And then this last year, we played several ranked public schools, state ranked, beat two state ranked public schools, ended up being ranked by Max Preps as number 8 in the state of Indiana amongst all schools. And
really,
yeah, and in the top 250 in the country. And we're not, I like to think we're carrying on where other teams have been, you know, because that team that beat us with Justin Jackson, that Houston team, was incredible. They were playing in prep school invitationals across the country, as did Oklahoma City, the team that we beat in the national championship game. So those programs have laid the groundwork to help us get to where we were, and I pray we can help other teams, homeschool teams, get further. But it's to the point now where kids are getting major college scholarships, Division I college scholarships, year in, year out, and Justin Jackson is playing on the Junior Olympic USA team and things like, you know, and now they're in the NBA, you know. And so it is something. It's basketball. Here's the funny thing, you know, to me it's like some of the best tennis players, some of the best swimmers, some of the best,
yeah,
all these other, yeah, Olympic-type athletes are homeschooled their whole life.
Yeah.
And no one says boo about it. No one brings it up. You say to someone, "Hey, this guy plays for a homeschool basketball team." And we literally had a player whose parent was homeschooling him and said, "You're going to go play for this homeschool basketball team." He said, "I don't want to play with a bunch of kids with glasses and wheelchairs." Like, that's literally what he said. And some people say, "Well, that's not what I think." But a lot of people think they're not good at basketball just because they're homeschooled. Like, how does that make any sense? It doesn't make any sense. So I think it's come a long way. And now we're to the place where there are teams that still won't play us because we're homeschooled and they're afraid to lose to us. So they don't want to. I had one AD of a prominent 4A, or it was a head coach of a prominent 4A school here in the Indianapolis area. I won't share names. Wanted to play us, wanted to host us, knows how good we were, and wanted it, the challenge for his team to play us. And the AD said, you don't have to answer to the fans, the board, the school board, and so on for me scheduling that game. Yeah. And so that's still there, you know. And yet, I've got to thank teams like Culver and Manuel, and Arlington's no longer in existence, but they scheduled us. Central Christian. I mean, there are all these schools that did say, hey, we'll let you get games against us and have played us. Richmond has us out at their tournament. Covenant Christian has had us at their tournament. And that has helped pave the way for us. I can't say thank you enough to those people who took a chance and said, we're willing to play you. Culver had us up there. First time we went up there, we beat them. They've beaten us far more now since then. And I've had some great teams, but they bring us up there every year to play us. And I think that's wonderful on their part because they took a chance to do it.
Well, shout out to Paul Settle.
Yes.
Breaking news here on Freedom 95. The next head coach, the current head coach of the Indianapolis Homeschool Wildcats. Is there a website where people can find out more information?
Yes, homeschoolwildcats.com. Very homeschoolwildcats.com altogether.
Shouldn't keep you much longer, but we haven't. We mentioned that you had been called into ministry locally to pastor a church, handpicked by your pastor at the time, I believe, through God's guidance.
Yeah.
You're a very thoughtful, meticulous, careful guy who doesn't go into anything without much prayer and supplication. Was there anything, any preparation you could have done that would have readied you for what you have been through, both good and bad, as the pastor of a church? By the way, we should say it was Indianapolis Christian Fellowship.
Yeah.
Now the Cross Church.
Now Cross Church, yeah.
Cross Church in South Indy.
Yes, South Indy. Yeah. I have to say, again, because the Lord orders the affairs of men, that only the Lord could have put together my life in such a way to prepare me for what I've gone through as a pastor and would continue to go through whatever. Yeah. For us to think that we can come up with a way, a man makes his plans, but the Lord directs his steps, Solomon said in Proverbs. And for me to think that I could have found a better way to prepare myself for that is prideful and arrogant. So I'm not going to do that. And I look back and think, yeah, I would have loved some doctrinal theological training because I do think there were things I went in presumptions and assumptions, you know, things that you just believe because you've always believed them, that I should have probably dug into more because I've changed things that I thought or believed since I became a pastor, having to dig into things or facing personal issues that I never had to face before.
Yeah.
So would I have loved to already have had that before I came in? Sure. But again, God knows that. And he allowed me to walk into that without knowing. And I was just cleaning out my basement. Because I helped someone move, and anytime you help someone move, you think, I better clean out my basement. And so I was cleaning out my basement over the weekend, and I found a picture of my ordination. And I thought, wow, I look young.
Yeah.
And I had no idea.
Yeah.
It's like marriage.
Sure.
You have no idea. It's like having kids. You have no idea.
Yeah.
And pastoring is the same thing. So I really had no idea, even at that moment, what I was about to get into. But it's been the most rewarding and the most challenging thing that I've done to this point, and I will continue to do it until the Lord sends me elsewhere.
Because of your eclectic life, we've had to bounce around a little bit during this podcast, and so I could drill down on any number of topics. But for some parting words, I'll frame it this way. I believe those of us involved with Freedom 95, every day there's a clash between kingdom culture and American culture or political culture or right-wing culture or left, you know. And I believe those of us who are believers, who are invested in politics, feel that war every single day.
Mm-hmm.
What do you think is the believer's role, the church's role? Maybe that's two different things, but you said earlier you believed that this format as you were launching, it was one that was needed in our community. Yet we can get so wrapped up in the day to day and the tweets and the issues.
Yes.
The slippery slopes.
Yeah.
That we lose sight of why we are here. From where you sit now, a little bit removed from the Freedom 95 day to day, and as someone so involved in a local church, but also the church at large, how do you sort all that out?
Yeah, it's very hard. And I've had some very angry congregants that I don't go one way or the other on it, because there are a lot of different opinions. If you're a believer, you have to be a believer first. And that means you have to go to the Word first. And I think the Word informs all of that for us. And I do believe that the most important things we can focus on are personally, my individual relationship with the Lord. Am I allowing politics? And I almost double majored in political science. I love politics that much.
Wow.
So I it's a side hobby. I don't do much with it other than following it, but I just think it is important, and I just enjoy the process of it. But I can't let that cause me to be anxious. The Lord says very clearly throughout the Word, do not be anxious. So if anything is causing us to be anxious or fearful that isn't God himself, that's a problem. And so that's one piece. If I ever let politics get me to the point where I feel like if A, B, or C happens, which a lot of politicians use to stoke up fear and motivation, if A, B, or C happens, then this is going to happen and you're going to be in trouble. That's lending yourself, tempting yourself to be anxious. We don't need to do that. We can make a stand for righteousness, and we can say these things are important without being anxious. Otherwise, God's a liar, or otherwise this is more important than God. That's a scary place to be. So that's, and being informed by the Word would take us a lot of places. I think if the church was who it was supposed to be in society, caring for the poor, caring for widows and orphans, and showing mercy, doing justice, so on and so forth. If the church was driven by that, the politicians wouldn't stand a chance to use it for their gain.
Yeah.
Unfortunately, we've left that to the government in a lot of respects. And I think it's put us in a place where we have to argue about where dollars go and what's more important. And we've also, unfortunately, given up the role of parenting, I think, in a lot of respects, our children, and raising our children not just to do the right thing, not to be law abiders. I don't want to live in a lawless society. I want my kids to do the right thing, but to be people who relate to God and relate to others the way Jesus said the most two biggest commandments tell us to: love the Lord your God with all your heart, mind, soul, and strength, and love others as yourself. If we raise our children to do that, again, would we have to fight to get laws on the books to get the things we want, in whether it be socially, fiscally, all these things? No. But right now, that's what we're fighting about. We're fighting about, where do we put our money? How do we treat other people? Is it legal or illegal to do this to a human being? Is it even a human being if the person isn't born yet? These things shouldn't even need to be argued, except that I think we have to look in the mirror first and say, is the church doing what it's supposed to be doing to raise the next generation, to know God, and love others, and to walk and encourage righteousness while not being anxious? That those are, I could go on forever on it, but those to me are the biggest pieces.
Boy, that don't be anxious, that's every day. I mean,
it is.
You need that hanging in your office somewhere, all of us.
Yeah.
That's a good way to close. The original program director of Freedom 95, he was national champion head coach of the Indianapolis Homeschool Wildcats, and the preaching pastor, the head
senior pastor something like
of
that.
Cross Church. And I believe the website is crosschurchindy.com.
Yes.
Crosschurchindy.com. If you would like to dig into that any further, any parting words for the Freedom 95 audience?
It's the right station for talk.
It still is after all these years.
Yes.
Thanks for stopping by. And let me be the first to say, you've got a great radio voice. You should look into it someday.
Love it.
You've been listening to the Voices of Freedom podcast on Freedom 95. For an audio archive, visit the podcast tab at freedom95.us.